Hello, Twins fans. This is John Swole with TwinsTrivia.com, and today we have the pleasure of speaking with John Sesek. John, after graduating from high school, attended the University of Missouri, where he starred in both football and baseball. After graduating from college, John signed a bonus contract with the Minnesota Twins, but due to a rule that was in effect back then, John ended up spending the entire 1965 season with the Minnesota Twins. So, without further ado, let's talk to John. John, you were born in Oak Park, Illinois. Is that where you grew up?
Actually, I grew up in the city of Chicago. Oak Park is just west of the city. And my parents selected an hospital in Oak Park to give birth to two twins. I have a twin brother, Jim, and he's 20 minutes older than myself. And then we were, you know, in the city until we were about 7 years old, and then moved to a suburb called Berwyn, which is just immediately south of Oak Park, and we're raised in Berwyn, Illinois.
Okay, and we'll touch on your twin a little bit later, but that's interesting. What was your favorite sport growing up?
Baseball was always our favorite. We played a little bit of basketball and played football, but baseball was mine, and I know it was my brother's as well. It was our favorite sport.
Were you a catcher most of the time?
I started out as a first baseman all through, I think it was sophomore in high school, and then catcher on a varsity team sustained an injury, and coach or manager asked if I would catch. I caught a little bit in batting practice, so I said, I'll go back there. So I stayed back there, and that was it.
That's amazing. That's a unique way to start out.
Yeah, it is.
I believe you attended the University of Missouri, where you played football and baseball for the Tigers. And if my information is correct, you played football in 62 and 63, and you were named All Big Eight. And then your 62 team was a very good football team, where you finished the season 8-1-2. You played, I believe, the Gophers to a 0-0 tie at Memorial Stadium, and that Gopher team had some of the great players that have gone through Minnesota, like Bobby Bell and Carl Eller. What do you remember about that game and your football career?
Well, I played, actually, my brother and I went to Missouri on football scholarships, and I played the Falls of 61, 2, and 3 at that time. Freshmen weren't eligible. Mm-hmm. So I played my sophomore, junior, and senior seasons, and we had a really good football team. So we never won the Big Eight, which it was at that time. The Texas schools were not in the conference, and we finished, I think, second every year. Seems like I looked up alumni magazine or something, a record of previous football teams or records over the years, and it, if I'm not mistaken, I think our 3 years of varsity, 61, 2, and 3, I think we only lost like 5 football games. We tied a few, and we probably won close to, you know, I think we played a 10 or 11 game schedule, 10 game schedule, 30 games. We probably won, you know, like 24 games and lost 5 and tied a couple or whatever, but we had really good teams. We were very good football teams. And then baseball, we had to go through one spring football practice to earn a spot on the varsity. That was the spring of our freshman year, to make sure that when we returned to football in the fall as sophomores, that we had a spot on the traveling team. At that time, you played both ways. There weren't just offensive, defensive specialists. There were a few, mm-hmm. but mostly everybody played both ways. And I think we would travel with like 30-some players. That would be our traveling squad. So your goal was to at least make it to the third string, so you'd be traveling, and you know, you would do that through spring practice, or your efforts in spring practice. So I only had to go through one of those spring practices because I love football, but I hated the practices. And to go only through one spring practice was a godsend, because then we were allowed to, in the ensuing year, we played baseball, and of course, that was during springtime, so we didn't have to go through spring football. And, mm-hmm. and it was great. And as far as playing the Gophers, I think we played up there 2 years. We beat them 1 year, 7-0. I think there was a 0-0 tie, so there wasn't very much scoring. And played against, I think sophomore year was a 0-0 tie, if I'm not mistaken. I think we came back the following year and beat up 7-0. And, yeah, played across from Bell and Eller and Milt Sunday, and they had, first year, I think Sandy Stevens was quarterback, and then Muncie, and they really had a good football team.
Yes,
they did. It was funny because there was a couple of ends on the Gopher team that when my brother and I were sophomores at Missouri and made the traveling squad and went up there to play the Gophers. One of the starting ends for the Gophers was a fellow by the name of Bob Deegan, and the second team, I think his backup at the same end position was a fellow by the name of Bob Prodzik. They both went to the same high school Jim and I went to in Berwyn, Illinois, Morton High School, and there was speculation, I recall, in the Minneapolis paper. I remember reading a paper before the game. It's possible that at one time all four ends on the field could be from the same high school outside Chicago, tomorrow's game or something like that. Never did happen, but what a good thought.
Well, that's really unusual from one high school.
Same high school, and then, they were good. Deegan, I think, was a really good ball player. I think it was all Big Ten, I don't know. Prodzik played up there for several years, and my brother and I were recruited up there. We went up to Minnesota for a visit, and I went to quite a few schools. We were fortunate to, being raised in Chicago, we were really tuned into going to a Big Ten school. And visited Wisconsin, Indiana, Illinois, kind of Northwestern, Minnesota, probably at least half of the Big Ten schools, and in addition to some other schools. But at that time, they had what they called the Big Ten had a grant and aid, and they would look into what your father's income was, and it would determine the extent of the scholarship. And my father's income, he had to file with the Big Eight, had to take tax returns or something anyway to verify his income, and they said, well, we can give each boy a half a scholarship. In essence, you'll have to pay for one, and the other one will be on a free ride. So, and that was fine with my parents. But then we talked to visited some other schools outside the Big Ten, like Big Eight schools, and they were offering. They didn't have that policy, and they were offering full rides to both of us. And plus the fact that the other attraction for Missouri was the fact that it wasn't that far from Chicago area, so my parents could come out and see quite a few games. And the baseball coach also came up with Dan Devine was the football coach. They came up together on one of their visits, and they basically, my dad asked Devine, if one of my boys gets hurt in football, knowing that they're on full scholarships, so they decide to go there, they'll be on full scholarships, and one of them gets hurt later in football, or both of them get hurt in football, does the scholarship continue? What happens? And can it be switched over to baseball or whatever? And the baseball coach was there, and he said, if they're good enough to start as sophomores, and they can still play baseball but cannot play football, if they can start, I'll switch that scholarship over somehow. I'll get the funds or whatever. You won't have to worry about paying for anything, as far as education. So that was kind of, I think that was kind of the final,
sure,
final sales pitch that swung us to go to Missouri. We liked it down there on our visits, and we liked it every place. Being raised in Chicago, we never left the city until we were in high school. We don't get to go on these trips. It was just like being in heaven and wine and dine and different places. Everybody was so cordial to you and very nice. They wanted you to come there, and everybody was very accommodating, and quite a few places we really liked. But it did seem like we were, Missouri seemed like a good spot. We were, and people liked it very much, never regretted it, and had a great time down there. Played on some good teams, too, good baseball teams and good football teams.
Yeah. What was Dan Devine like as a coach?
Good. He was a really good organizer. He's a wonderful organizer. He'd probably been there a couple of years when I was eligible for the varsity. They come from Arizona State, I believe, and he's a Minnesota, he's born and raised in Proctor, Minnesota, so he has Minnesota roots, and I think he went to the University of Minnesota, Duluth, and strong Minnesota ties, and He was a good coach. Really organized. The staff did the lion's share of the coaching, as many of them do. But he was he was a wonderful recruiter and good man. I think he was honest, and kind of soft spoken. It was fun to play for. And then of course he went on to the Packers and great career at Mizzou and then Packers and Notre Dame and great coaching career.
Yes, he did. Well, you know the Gophers are opening up a brand new football stadium here in another week or so.
Where is that? Is that at the same site as the old stadium?
Not too far away from it.
Know what's going to happen or what do they do with the old stadium?
Well, they tore that one down back in the early
80s. Oh, they did.
Yeah, and then the Gophers played, in the Metrodome since that opened in 82. About a year or a year and a half ago, they started building this new stadium, an outdoor football stadium, and it's going to be called TCF Stadium for Twin City Federal. But it's everybody's pretty excited up here, and they're going to have I think the first home game's like in 2 weeks, and they're having Air Force come in, and they're having a big flyover, so everybody's
wonderful,
excited for outdoor football again.
Oh, good. Or what's the seating capacity of the new stadium, or will that be?
It's smaller. I think it's in the 40,000s, but it was built so that it could be expanded. And, here the Vikings are looking for a new stadium, and a lot of people are talking about, well, why don't they just expand that and then, share it with the Gophers. But the Gophers aren't too excited about that, nor are the Vikings about not having their own stadium.
Their own stadium, exactly. I read it probably twice a week. I'll open up the Minneapolis Star Tribune and read Hartman's column try to keep in touch with what's going on up there. I know that the Twins have a new stadium next year, and I guess I'm shocked, really, that they don't have a dome or some kind of retractable dome on it.
Well, money is always an issue in Minnesota, and it went on for so many years that I think the original location for the stadium where they had wanted it was right on the river, the Mississippi, and that got taken by somebody else because they were kind of goofing around and couldn't afford it. And then so they built it just west of downtown Minneapolis is, unfortunately, I think, next to a garbage burner, and so we'll see how that works out.
Oh, I saw that in the paper. I thought on a hot summer night, could afford some sweet aromas.
Yeah, we'll have to see how that works out. And the site isn't that big, and that's, I think, the primary reason for no retractable is that there's no place to store it, according to the Twins. But but that's going to be fun. This week they're laying the sod.
I saw that in the paper, too. I looked at the paper yesterday. I saw that they had this roll of sod. They brought them in from Colorado someplace.
Yeah,
I read the article, and it was interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of got some of the Minnesota folks excited that they're bringing in grass from another state for a Minnesota stadium.
I can imagine,
But,
do you think they'll be able to hold on to Maurer?
It's going to be interesting. I don't see him as leaving just because he has so much family here and he's tied to here, but on the other hand, he really wants to win. And if the Twins don't go all out and get good supporting players, then he might move on. But boy, the guy can hit.
Oh, he's one of the best I've seen. I mean, we don't get him, on TV naturally down here that often. Mm-hmm. They just finished a 4-game series with the Rangers, and every Ranger game we get down here, and then the Rangers I think are coming up there.
Tomorrow,
and I'll see those games. But every opportunity, that I can see him on TV, I try to make a point of watching him hit. He's one of the best I've ever seen. He really is. Yeah. He can really hit. I've talked to the guys I played ball with, and Reese, and Reese lives up in Brainerd half the year. I think I mentioned that to you.
Mm-hmm.
He still watches the Twins, and we've talked. And I said, even Reese can't believe it either. He said, geez, can he hit?
It's like, it's nothing to him. Walks up, steps up, and gets a couple hits. It's incredible. Now, this year, he's got, 25 home runs?
Yeah, he's got 25 home runs. And I hitting around 380, and I just, there's no wasted motion with him. I mean, he spots half the time, more than half the time, it looks like he'll spot a guy, a strike guy, only one right down the middle, and, you know, he'll just take it. That doesn't leave his shoulder, just looks at it like, oh, okay, that's the best fastball you got then, I guess, you know. A lot of people, you know, if you play ball, a lot of people will open up or, you know, check swings. I hardly ever see him do that. I mean, he just, you know, he's right on everything. He's quick at the plate. He's got a wonderful eye, I think. He just doesn't swing at a lot of bad pitches.
And he's, you know, built up such a good reputation. I think he gets the break on some of the calls.
Too. Yeah, some close ones will go his way because of that.
But he's an amazing player, that's for sure.
He really is. He's something else. I think he's just fantastic. He and Pujols, I think, are the two best hitters in baseball right now.
And to think, you know, he's hitting almost 380.
Yeah, catching every day. I mean, gosh almighty. I mean, what a strain that is. I know. I mean, the strain it could be on your back and legs and everything. And I think one advantage, that's probably one advantage of playing half the games in the dome is that, you know, the temperature's controlled. If he's playing down in, you know, down here in Texas or something, I don't think he could do it every night, 9,500 degrees at night. You know, the game starts at 90 degrees. I don't think he'd be able to go back there every night. I think he'd do a lot more DHing, but geez, he's got this wonderful stroke.
Yes, he does. You played, you were the catcher on the Missouri team between 62 and 64, playing for a team that I think went to the College World Series three times, and you finished second overall in 64.
Uh-huh.
Tell us about some of those teams.
Well, we were fortunate. We won the Big Eight every year. We had a wonderful pitching staff, really good pitching staff. I think it's still, I think it was 64 team. Still holds the NCAA record for combined earned run average. I think our earned run average on the team was like .078 or something like that. It's still an you could check it, but I know it's an NCAA record. It still stands, and I can't imagine it ever being broken. And there were three of the pitchers, Keith Weber, a right-hander from Jeff, who's a football player as well, and got hurt in football, so he stayed with baseball. He signed with the Mets. Dennis Musgraves was another pitcher from St. Louis who signed with the Mets for $100,000, which was just huge back then. And Jack Stroud was a left-hander that threw, honestly, I don't, you know, they didn't have the radar guns of that, but he had to throw 95 at least. I mean, a rising fastball was an accomplished pitcher. We had a really, really good team. In fact, we played every year. As you mentioned, every year we went to Omaha and played those College World Series games. Mm-hmm. And I think the first year, when I was a sophomore, it's double elimination. I'm thinking we lost both our games, and we were back in Columbia, Missouri before we knew it. And then the second year, I think we went 2-2, and you know, won a couple and lost two. We were eliminated. And then my senior year, we ended up playing for the championship, and ironically, we played against the Gophers for the NCAA championship. They beat us 5-1, and we had beaten them to give them their only loss. I can't remember who beat us. Somebody beat us too. We went in the losers bracket, but we had beaten the Gophers earlier 4-1. We both came to the title game out of the, with one loss apiece, and they beat us 5-1 in the. In the championship game, and they had a good team. And I think the guy, and this is so long ago, John, I can't remember, but I think the guy we beat 4-1 was their ace pitcher, but maybe I'm wrong. The guy that beat us 5-1 for the championship, Joe Pollock was his name. It's just big curveball, and I admit that I don't know put this in there, but I mean, everybody would come back to the dugout like, can you believe this guy's getting us out? He doesn't have any. But, you know, I can remember thinking, holy mackerel, we got to light this guy up. He had a big roundhouse curveball, not a, you know, I mean, a fastball, but it wasn't that hard a thrower. And he beat us, and anyway, I think we were on our team. I know that maybe seven guys signed off of our team professionally. Musgraves went to the Mets for the, as I mentioned, I think his bonus was, you know, $100,000 with them. Weber went to the Mets, and with the Twins.
Wow.
As Twins signed all of us. I remember that Billy Martin then was a scout with the Twins. And he scouted us, and then I can't remember. I don't know if I know that Bill Messman signed my brother and I. He was a scout that, you know, was there when we actually inked the contract. And then I don't know if he signed the other three guys off of our team, if he was responsible for the actual signing of them.
What when Bill Messman signed you guys, what do you remember about that? Were you offered a bonus? How did that work out?
Yeah, we were offered bonuses, and we were talking a couple teams, and you know, we were raised in Chicago. We're big Cubs fans. We were talking, and we were scouted by the Cubs through high school and stuff, and playing, you know, Legion ball and County Mac baseball, and then Missouri too. And the Cubs didn't. I think they offered $8,000. A bonus, anything over eight, they had some kind of a bonus rule. That's why I stayed with the Twins. They had some kind of a bonus rule in effect at the time that anybody receiving over $8,000 was considered a bonus baby. And you know, I got my brother and I got $10,000 apiece bonuses. And in fact, the guy that was one of our best college friends that graduated a year before us was working. He was a journalism major, and he was working for a newspaper. And I think it was in Boston or Washington, D.C., you know, a year removed from school, and we signed with the Twins. And he sees a little blurb in a paper. He's scanning papers or something out wherever he lives, and he sees a blurb, Twins sign with Twins. And he calls us. He said, "Holy mackerel, did you guys luck out? What are you talking about? We're talking. Yeah, we lucked out. Yeah, we did luck out. We're signing and everything." He says, "Holy crap, what are you guys going to do with all that money?" And, "Well, we got, yeah, that's a lot of money, $10,000 apiece." He's $10,000. You guys got $100,000 apiece. And what had happened is the article you read was a typographical error. They put too many zeros in there. He thought Jim and I each got $100 apiece.
Oh, goodness.
And I said, "Now you better drop a goose egg off that one. We got 10 apiece, and I don't know, you know, what we're going to do with it. It's more than we've ever seen, but, you know, we're thankful for it." But,
yeah.
Yeah, anyway, that's how, you know, that bonus rule was in effect. And I think the team was allowed to, I think the way it worked was that anybody receiving over $8,000, if you did not want to lose them that winter to a draft or whatever, to another team via the draft, you had to put those players, you were allowed to put at least three of those players that you signed on the 40-man roster, major league roster. So Carew, Boswell, and myself were put on that roster. You know, Carew got like $35,000, and Boswell ended up getting 15 or 20 or something to sign. And so they put the three of us on the 40-man roster, and then I think going one step further, once spring training started, or once the season started, you had to carry two of those players on your 25-man roster. If I remember right, because I remember Rene Latchman, who I got to know very well, he was with, it was then the Kansas City A's before they moved to Oakland. Every team had a couple of guys in this situation, you know, and at least one or something. Anyway, the Twins had two. It was Boswell and myself. Of course, Bos had to pitch quite a bit. I never got to play much. I mean, with Zimmerman and Batty doing all the catching, I never got hit much. But Boswell got to pitch, and they decided to send Carew out. He needed more seasoning. So they sent him to whatever, Orlando or whatever. I think he sort of returned like 2 years later to the big leagues or something, 67. I think he was back. But anyway, he was a guy they sent out and kept Boswell and myself because of that bonus rule. And I think my explanation might not be 100% accurate, but that was the way I kind of remembered at the time.
Yeah, it sounds like I tried to do some research on it, couldn't really find a whole lot on it. But how did the rest of the team react to having someone like yourself on the team who had gotten a good bonus and went to the majors right away?
I was treated really well. If there was any animosity, I didn't detect any. Everybody was more than nice, and I knew that, you know, I wasn't going to play. Maybe there was some and I was simply there because of the bonus situation. That may well have been the case. I can certainly understand that, but it was never expressed to me. They were very nice. I room with Casey Olmedo, Johnny Klipstein, who was just tremendous. He was a great guy, a real gentleman, and of course had been around for a number of years.
Sure.
And knew tons of people and places to eat and nice place to go have a cold beer after a game where you don't get any trouble. And he was just a good guy. Yeah. Good guy. He took good care of me.
It's always nice to run into somebody like that.
Really, he was a class act. Wonderful man.
You didn't get to play too much in that 1965 season. You got into only 12 games, I think, and got a total of 16 at-bats. What was that season like for you as you had to primarily sit on the bench watching as a team fought its way to the 65 pennant and eventually a meeting with the Dodgers in the World Series?
That was, looking back, I was just exciting. Like being a fan, but even better than that, having one of the best seats in the ballpark and being a part of it. But I knew what the role was, that I wasn't going to play much, and just accepted it, and knew I'd be out in the bullpen all the time. But it was just a wonderful year, and see some of the years that those guys had, some of those players had, just with Geno Mudkin and Zoilo, and see those. The skill that they brought to the game, what professionals they were, and how talented they were, was just was wonderful. It really was. It was a great experience.
You must have been, 23, 24, somewhere in there? And
I was signed, I was born at 42, so I turned 23 in the summer, mid-year. My birthday's in July, so when the season started, I was 22. Turned 23 in July.
What a great way to spend the year, isn't it?
Oh, it was wonderful. It was wonderful. And then, I had a progressive bonus thing, and I think that was pretty much standard of the norm. If you signed, in that era or whatever, you had what they call a progressive bonus. In addition to your upfront money, in my case, the $10,000, you in your contract was a kind of an escalation progressive bonus. So that if you stayed in Double A for 90 days, they'd send you the A-ball or rookie league or something. Normally, that was the route you would start out at, the level you would start out at. And if you say you went to Double A and you stayed there 90 days, it was worth another $1,500 to you. And if you went to Triple A and you stayed 90 days, it was worth another $2,000 or something. Mm-hmm. Maybe, $2,500 or something. And if you stayed in the big leagues for 90 days, it was worth $7,500. So
nice money.
Oh well, just and then the World Series check. Yeah. I think the Dodgers' share was $9,600, and ours was like $6,700 or something. And so I got the major league minimum, which was like $7,500. I got the $7,500, which was part of the progressive bonus, and I got the share of pick up like $22,000. I thought, man, a couple more years like this, I'll be able to retire. it was wonderful, and it was a good experience. It was really enjoyed it. Obviously would have liked to play more, but
sure.
It was just wonderful guys to be around, and I still stay in contact with some of them, so it was wonderful.
It turns out, John, that those 16 at-bats in 1965 were your only at-bats in the majors. What do you remember about your major league debut at Tiger Stadium on April 24th?
I was looking for something that somebody sent me. It must have been 5 or 6 years ago, and I've pitched it since, but somebody sent me, some Twins fan kept the log of every box score, kept the log of every game in which I appeared and had the box score and line item description if I batted or what I did or whatever, and sent it to me, which was very nice. And I can remember being nervous getting in the game. I was always nervous. I didn't play that much and didn't want to, nervous. And not so much to be playing, just the fact that you didn't want to screw up or embarrass yourself,
Sure.
And I know I was nervous, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's so long ago now, but that's why I always wish I could find the box score.
Well, you can, and I'm looking at it right now.
Did Willie Horton hit a home run in that game?
Yes, he did. Yes, you did. It,
off of Jerry Fosdell?
Yep.
That's what I was getting to. I think for some reason when I went in, I don't know, was it 7th or 8th inning or 9th inning to catch? I don't think I batted in that game. All I did was catch.
Yeah.
I remember, if you remember, that, you know, those days the pitcher was brought in by the car, you know, the car and drop off from the dugout, you're walking.
Yep.
Well, I was told I was going in the game. I was had the gear on. I was already, you know, out on the field. And here comes a pitching change. I think Fosdell was coming in to pitch that inning. And I remember walking out to the mound to meet him. And I remember telling Foz that, you know, that looking over, and I think it was Horton. I think Horton was the first batter, but I'm not sure. I know he
was.
Okay. Then I think Horton. I remember saying something to Fosno, because I would listen to the meetings. They'd go over in the meeting. Martin ran most of the meetings, you know, going over the opposing hitters. And this guy likes, you know, he's a high fastball hitter. You know, I would remember that stuff. Not that I was going to ever have probably an opportunity to use it, but I was so interested because I followed these guys. You know, I knew all the names of all the players, and, you know, I'd seen them numerous times on TV. And now to be on a field with them was just a thrill beyond compare, but I would listen intently, you know, how we were going to pitch him or how the pitchers were going to attempt to pitch him. And I remember something about Horton, you know, saying something. I can't remember what it was. He liked to pull out away from her, whatever. But I remember being on a mound when Fosno came out there. I looked over the on deck circle and I saw Horton swinging the bats over his head. I knew he was the first hitter. And I remember saying something to Foz, like, I said, Jesus, Horton, you know, in the meeting, and I just, no, sir, got that out, and Foz was throwing a rubbery side. I was in the goddamn meeting, too. I heard what they said. So I shut up and trotted behind the plate. He threw his warm-ups. I threw it down to second base, and here comes Horton. And there, I was like, the first or second pitch, he's in the upper deck right center field, that old Detroit ballpark. I started looking at Foz, though, and I remember looking in the first base dugout, and Martin looking at me like, what the hell did you call that for, you know? And I remember Fosno shaking me off, you know. I remember him shaking me off like I was, whatever it was, you know, I wanted, hey, I don't know what, but yeah. I remember Martin looking at me, and after the game, I remember Martin coming over to me. What the hell did you call that for? And he only likes the ball here, he didn't like, you know, whatever. I said, I call for this, and Fos wanted to throw. Don't let him shake you off. Like, oh, am I to say?
You know? Yeah, you got a rookie. And
yeah, great. First game I've been in, he's going to listen to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just kind of looking. It's on a site that I use quite a bit. It's baseball-reference.com. And you can look up any player, and it's got their history, and then you can look at the game logs. And, you know, looking at the game log here, what it has, you know, in the ninth inning, bottom of the ninth, Fosno replaces Reese, pitching and batting second, and John Sefcik replaces Sandy Valdespino, pinch hitter, and you're batting ninth, and Tovar replaces Nostic, and so forth. And then it has Fosno facing Horton first, and he hits a home run, and then next batter, I think what it says it's Bill Freehand, and he grounds out third to first, and then McAuliffe is up, and he walks, Fosno walks him, then Larry, Larry Sherry? Yeah. Is batting, and McAuliffe steals second, and then Larry Sherry strikes out. And then Jerry Lumpy walks.
Uh-huh.
And then Worthington replaced Fosno.
Oh, yeah.
And Gates Brown comes up to pinch hit.
And what does he do?
And he hits a home run off of Al Worthington.
Oh, my gosh.
And you guys end up losing 7-4.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
But it's fun to look through that stuff see some of the names and, you know, who did what. And it comes in pretty handy. It's a fun sight.
Yeah, you mentioned Freehand. That jogs my memory because I know I mentioned earlier we were talking about football and being recruited. My brother and I went up to the University of Michigan and were recruited up there to play football. And they knew we had an interest in baseball, and Freehand was the guy that took us out. You know, they always kind of assigned you to somebody that's a student athlete already, you know, kind of chaperones you for the weekend or whatever, and I think they still do that as far as the recruiting procedure. Anyway, when we went up there, Freehand was the one that showed us around, and he was like a sophomore that played football. He was an avid football, and of course a catcher on a baseball team. And if I'm not mistaken, I think he signed after sophomore year with Detroit for a big bonus.
I know he signed for a big bonus.
I don't think he went through 4 years of college. I think sophomore, junior year, he got a huge bonus from the Tigers. Because we were seniors in high school, so he would have been like 2 years older than us.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I don't think he played, I don't know how long he played the minors, but I know that near 65 he was Detroit's regular catcher and probably been there a year or two already.
He was a pretty good player.
Yeah, he was a real good ball player. But he took my brother and I out. He showed us around. You guys ought to come here. You like it here, blah, blah, blah.
Bob Allison played some football, for Kansas?
Yeah, played at KU from Kansas City originally, or Kansas City area, Raytown.
Did you guys have any football discussions?
The first time I ever met him was in spring training, and I for sure went to big league spring training, and I didn't, you know, I knew who he was, and it's kind of sheepish, you're in the locker room, you don't really belong here on the 40-man roster, and of course then they got the other... they got the other farmhands on, or extra pitchers and catchers, and everybody there, mm-hmm. 60 guys in uniform. And we're all over in the corner someplace and see Killebrew and that. And finally, you start meeting them out on the field, they'll come and walk up to you or something. But I hadn't met Allison. I was standing in the outfield. Camera caught batting cracks already or something. I don't know, warm some pictures up. I was standing in the outfield during batting, shagging or something, just standing out there. And somebody came up behind me and put a death grip around my neck with her forearm, whipped me down to the ground from behind. And I couldn't get loose. They're laying on top of me and pardon you, asshole and stuff. Here's a Reed Tiger. It was Allison. I never even met him, And he was so strong, I couldn't get him off me. He had me pinned. He just surprised me and flipped me out. He was on top of me. My hat goes flying off. I'm right at it. He's just on top of me. He's got me pissed. I mean, he knows I'm immobilized, He's just whispering in my ear, you asshole, And then stands up and introduced himself. And I got to know him really, really well after that. I mean, I belonged to a course in Eden Prairie that Bob was already a member of when I joined. I didn't even realize it. Olympic Hills, it was down in Eden Prairie, and played there for years and played with Allison for a long time down there. Really, I got to be pretty good friends with him.
Yeah, he was supposedly really a strong guy.
Oh, he was strong. God, he was strong. But he played football. I guess played, sophomore year. I think he signed after. Washington signed him after sophomore or something. He was played fullback, I think, at KU. Anyway, I could see he would be. He was strong. He was really built. Yeah.
Pretty good catch in that down that left field line.
Left field line, yeah, he really was. Mm-hmm.
Yep. As we kind of continue on, you had one hit in the major leagues, and that was a double to left at Memorial Stadium off Oriole pitcher Wally Bunker in late September. What do you remember about that hit?
It was after we had clinched the pennant in Washington or something against the Senators, so we busted over to Baltimore, and all the scrubs or guys that didn't play much were gonna, I think all the regular, everybody toasting and drinking and having a good time, and after they clinched, I think everybody else got a chance to play, and that was the first game I got to start or something you're catching, and it was against Bunker, and I don't know if it was the first or second time up, it was a hanging curveball, I remember that, and it was about, I don't know, home run when I hit it. It was line drive, but it was like maybe 5 feet fair and about a foot from, just a...
going out.
Yeah, it was a little line drive, in the first or second row, I thought, geez, that's an out, I'm running down the first kind of half jog and thinking that's out, and it hits on the wall, and careens towards center field. I got a double, and then the umpire, I remember, the ball was thrown in at second base or something, and the umpire said, that's your first hit, isn't it? The umpire, whoever the second base umpire was, I think Aparicio was a shortstop for the Orioles, and he had the ball in his hand, and the umpire said, give it, they were yelling from our dugout, the Twins players were yelling from our dugout, roll the ball over here to Aparicio, and he rolled it and threw it over the first base dugout. I still they had a presentation of the ball to me, and I remember that, and I remember a couple, I batted like 16 times, and they were so sporadic and spaced out. I remember a couple times, if I could have run, I was a typical catcher, running, but I remember hitting a ball one night in New York off of, I can't remember the pitcher's name, he was a knuckleballer for the Yankees, Bob Tiefenauer's relief pitcher or something.
Hadn't heard that name in a long time.
Yeah, and he threw a knuckle or something, I hit a BB to the right of the shortstop, and that was Phil Lynn's, was a short, something playing short, almost one hoppers, and he crosses over and it hits his glove and trickles about 3 feet from him. Well, if I, had any kind of legs, I'd have beat it. I mean, he got me by like half a step or something. I don't know. I thought I was safe anyway. The umpire called me out, but I thought in another one, I had a shot someplace. I guess the Angels or something. I can't remember. I had a BB at somebody to a line drive. I thought that was a hit line drive to left. I can't remember, but I hit a shot to somebody. I thought that was a base hit when I hit it too. But anyway, shoulda, woulda, coulda.
Yeah. Yeah, but you still got to make it to the major leagues, and you got to play.
Yeah, I got to play. Got a chance to play. I'll never forget it. It was, being on a World Series team and a pennant winner. That was something.
What was it like, to be in a World Series when you were so young?
For me, I know, it's just so exciting. I mean, the whole pomp and rigmarole and, excited Minneapolis was, Minneapolis St. Paul was for that World Series.
Sure.
It was just wonderful. And, play the Dodgers and, the great team they had, the pitching staff they had. It was, we won the first two and then went to L.A., lost the next three, and then won Game 6 back home, and it came down to Game 7. I believe it was Cott. Yeah, it was Cott that pitched for us and against Koufax. And I don't know if you recall, but that stadium, those bullpens kind of joined each other back-to-back underneath the scoreboard.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember warming up Cott to start the game. So he went out to pitch, and Koufax still right behind me was a screen, and on the other side of that screen was a pitching mound, and Koufax was throwing away from me towards his catcher, so he was probably less than 10 feet from me on the other side of the fence. And I remember Cott, going out, warming up to start the first inning. I played the anthem or whatever, Cott loosening up on the mound, and I turn around to watch Koufax finish his warm-up. So I thought, holy mackerel, I'm standing behind him watching him throw away from me to his catcher. And I remember telling Zimmerman or somebody, Klipstein or whatever, holy cow, he got stuff. I couldn't believe it. His warm-up catcher was sitting on the corner. He'd hit the glove with a curveball and fastball. I remember, it wasn't the warmest. I don't know what the temperatures were, but it was, late in the season like that, it can be pretty iffy.
Sure.
I remember he turned around before he completed his warm-up, so I was just standing there looking at him from behind. He looked right at me, and he kind of raised his left arm above his head, pulled down on his undershirt, like pulling the sleeve on it and rolling his shoulder around. He said, "Geez, I can't get loose." I really can't. Said to me, "You can't get loose. What do you throw like if you get loose?" I remember he got that look right at me. He said, "I just can't get loose in this weather." And I thought, "Holy mackerel!"
Yeah, he was a pretty amazing pitcher.
Oh, he was unbelievable.
And I missed that World Series. I had gone into the Navy back right after high school in 65, and so I was in boot camp and I'm going to radar school, so I missed the whole World Series that time around, but that's the way it works out.
Oh yeah. Well,
you
got to see a couple of good ones hopefully after that. You saw the...
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I got to both of them actually, and a couple games, and that was a lot of fun.
Uh-huh.
Did you get a World Series ring?
Yes, I did. I still have that. Mm-hmm. I did, and a full share of the series.
Money.
Yeah.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah, really nice.
So after the series in 1966, you spent the entire season with Charlotte in Double-A Southern League, and in 67 you split time with Wilson, Carolina A-Ball, and Denver in the Pacific Coast League, which was Triple-A at that time. I think the interesting thing about that year was that you had the good fortune at Wilson to play ball with your identical twin brother Jim, who is an outfielder on the team. I'm sorry. It sure would have been nice if if identical twins could have played for the Minnesota Twins. What do you remember about that season?
It was fun to play with them. I played with them in college and all through high school, and it was fun to play together. I think he played one more year after that. I'm not sure if he did. I think he might have played at Orlando the following year. He played like 3 years, the minors, 2.5, 3 years, and married and had a child and had to get on with life. You know, couldn't make it on that minor league salary, but. It was fun to play with him, and I can remember, I think it was Gebhardt was on the team. Bob Gebhardt, remember Gebhardt?
Yep.
I think he's still in baseball with Phoenix or Diamondbacks, I think. But anyway,
yeah, he is.
Geb was on the team, and I've heard him, you know, he's known the story for a long time, and I can't remember who else was on that team. But anyway, this was in Wilson, and I know it was just unbearably hot down there. In those days, John, those uniforms were like army blankets. You know, they weighed 200 pounds. I know I caught the first game of a doubleheader Sunday afternoon. I remember that was hotter than heck. And I went down to the bullpen down the third baseline for the second game. The other catcher on the team caught the second game. I remember I changed uniforms, and I was down in the bullpen, sitting down in the bullpen, and my brother played left field for us. Then he played outfield for us. And I remember he wasn't batting or something, and instead of running into the dugout, I mean, he was scheduled to bat in that inning, he just trotted over and sat down in the bullpen and grabbed some water out of the big truck and there, you know, sat down and cut down on the running and complaining about, geez, how hot it is, that crazy, so I'm just burning up. So a couple of guys went, you guys just switch jerseys, you know. John, you go out there and take his place, just stand around for an inning, you know. I always get to, you know, the outfielders stay to get in the ballpark anyway. So we did, we switched jerseys, and I went out there. The second guy hit one right at me, and I turned a single into a triple, and our manager, Vern Morgan, didn't know the difference, you know. So, just roaring, you know. And Jeff Hart, I remember, knew it and just loves that story.
It is. It's a great story.
But it was fun. I mean, I remember that about that year. But it was fun to play with him. Fun to play with my brother. And he lives in Florida, and I talked to him quite a bit.
Where does he live in Florida?
He lives in a town called Port Orange near Daytona Beach on the East Coast.
East Coast.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He has three children, and two of them, well, actually one now, one still lives in Florida in Orlando area, and the other one just moved from Orlando to Houston, and he has a third child. His oldest son lives in Chicago.
Hmm.
Children, yeah.
Interesting. In 1968, John, you played at Double-A Charlotte in the Southern League, and after that you spent the rest of your minor league career playing at Triple-A Denver in 69 and Evansville in 70, and you finished your career playing for Portland in 1971. Why at the age of 28, John, did you walk away from pro ball?
I didn't have any chance of me returning to the big leagues as a player, and I figured I better get on with my life and do something else. I had a college degree, and you know, better get started on something. And I do remember that that last year in Portland, Ralph Rowe was our manager, and towards the end of the season, a month ago, the end of the season, I remember him calling me into the office and shutting the door. I thought, oh, great, here comes a big slip. You know, he said, hey, for what it's worth, I just talked to Brophy and. I don't know for sure. Randall Robertson was still around at the time or whatever. Anyway, I talked to Minnesota, and I'll put a recommendation for you. He said, you'd make a good manager. You'd be a good manager. He said, you've had the opportunity to hit. You work with pitchers. The whole field's in front of you. I like catchers. So if catchers make good manager. He said, I told him, you got the right temperament for it. You can handle these kids and everything. I said, oh, Jesus. And I thought that was my first reaction. Oh, jeez. And he said, you know, I mean, you can play, you can continue to play, but, you know, you think your chances are going to be good. You tell me, are your chances good to get back to big leagues? And if you do, it's going to be as a backup catcher. And how secure is that? And he said, I'm thinking. thinking, you know, you'd make a heck of a manager, and I'm thinking you got a chance to get the big leagues, you know, the coach or manager down the road. And he said, I'm telling you, I think you'd be good. And I went, you know, kept that. They mentioned it as the season was winding down once, so I thought anymore about it, and I said, nah, I don't know. And then it came close to the end of the year, and he said, you got to, we'd spent some time in Minneapolis. I was going to live in Minneapolis anyway. We were going to stay in Minneapolis. And we were, mm-hmm. So, you know, go in there and talk to them about it. So I did. I mean, once the season wrapped up in Portland, we were back in Minneapolis, and we're going in and talking to Brophy, then talked to Calvin. And again, for some reason, I'm thinking in the back of my head, Aquilis, he was sitting next to me. We're talking to Calvin about managing or something. And then, okay, he wasn't talking to Aquilis about being a major league manager. He was talking to both of us managing in the minor leagues or something. Mm-hmm. You guys are to it, and you know, and he looks at me, and I remember he says, Ralph Earl likes you, and he thinks, I like Ralph, so I'm, you know, okay, well, that'd be fine, with me, you know, you take that job and send you down to rookie league. Frank, you've got to consider, we're going to make some changes in the organization, and I want you guys to, nothing discussed about salary or anything, you know. And Roe kind of gave an indication where they start minor league manager salary-wise, and you know, he also left instructions. You know, when you talk to him, call me up afterward. And I remember calling Rhodes and lived in South Carolina in the offseason. I remember calling him. I said, hey, you know, tell him what transpired and what they say about money. I said, didn't say anything. He said, they get back to me a couple days. Call me when they get back. He said, well, I'm telling you what they'll offer you. They'll start at this. Tell me you don't want it. Tell me you want this. You know, he's giving me the whole. They got a fellow, sure enough, like Brophy calls a couple days later, and Brophy or somebody calls, and I don't know who called. What, Calvin, but what do you think? And I said, I don't know. How much is that? What am I going to get paid? And that's what I'm calling. We'd start to say, well, just exactly what Ralph told me. And I said, what Ralph told me again, I told him, you know, I said, I'd want this. We don't, you know, it was like $2,000 difference. They could start at 10. And I wanted Ralph to tell me what, 12. And settle for 11.5, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think I did the honest for Ralph's instructions. Give me 12. No, we don't pay anybody 12. You got to be managing a while before you get $12,000 in our organization or anybody's organization. You know, they're pretty frugal, you know, the Twins yeah. were in it. Take it or leave it. I said, well, we'll think about it. We'll, you know, and I remember talking to them again. I think they went to 10.5 or something. And I thought about it, and I thought, geez, rookie league. You know, and at that time, you didn't have, I think now I see minor league games on TV, there's a manager, there's a couple of coaches, you know, and they're pretty well staffed. In those days, you were, you know, the fire chief, the police chief, and everything, you know, I mean, you ran the whole show, and no support, and I thought, boy, some of these rookie league teams, you're getting these kids out of high school, they're their first time away from home, they'll be, you know, I'll be going down to bail them out of jail because they're drinking yeah. now, you know, and I thought I'm going to be more of a babysitter than I can. And I can't remember where it was the rookie league team was. I thought it didn't sound too appealing, and I turned it down. I better call them back. I don't know, I got to do this. Well, you got something lined up? What are you going to do? I said, I'm looking for a job. I think you're making a mistake. You know, I remember Brophy saying, I'm telling you, Sebs, he used to call me Sebs, I'm telling you, buddy, you're making a mistake. I said, well, I don't know, George, I'm not going to do it. Sebs, I'm telling you, it'd be a good one, I think. And I'm a head different. Well, whatever. You got to do what you think is right. You know, and that was it. And many times I thought back on that. I thought, you know, I mean, not that I have any regrets or anything, but I thought, gee, what if I stayed in it? What if I ever got back to the big leagues as a coach or, man, you know, in another organization or would have gotten the big league time in or whatever, you know?
You never know. Yeah, you just never know.
You never know.
Have a regret. That's the path you chose at the time.
Yeah, it's a choice you make. And, yep. You know, it's just, I thought about it. And, you know, I don't dwell on it, believe me, but every, you know, I see somebody like I play with Charlie Manuel, manager of the Phillies, or, yep. You know, I think, Jesus Christ, I remember, you know, playing with a grinder for years. And, you know, I think I see other guys or names. I see guys that are coaches, not so much now, but maybe 10, 15. I played with Rick Renick for a number of years. He was a coach with the Twins. And, you yep. know, some pitching coaches, Mark, I think he's still, we used to call him Wiley Coyote, Mark Wiley.
Yep.
And he's with Florida or somebody, you know, pitching coach. I played with him in Portland. And, I don't know. Maybe I could have gotten 20 years of, as a coach or something. Who knows? You know, yeah. I knew Still Maychick and how long he'd been around there. You know.
He's still there.
He's still there. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he's getting up there though, and you know he's. They take pretty good care of him. He doesn't do all that much.
Right.
I watch him in spring training, and you know they put him on a golf cart and drive him, you know, from field to field.
Sure.
And,
mm-hmm.
But yeah. I would think that he's probably gonna hang it up here pretty soon. But
I would think so. But yeah, probably hard to walk away from it though. You know.
Yeah, it's something you've done your entire life.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
That's really something. Do you think, John, that year that you know you spent in the majors because of that bonus rule? Do you think that impacted your career?
I think I don't. You know, I think the next year I played, they had a crummy year in Charlotte. I think virtually laying out a year. You know,
sure.
I think that had some effect on me. It may have. I don't know. You know, then I seemed like it, they sent me to Wilson, and I had some halfway. You know, I was never. You know, tremendous. But anyway, I had some halfway decent years in minor leagues and stuff. And I don't know. I thought, I remember guys that went to the big leagues as catchers. I remember they gave Mitterwald a bunch of money. He moved along, and some other guys who went. And I thought, I thought that was just sure as they were. But it's all opinion and whatever. But I don't think that was any real benefit to me. Just to sit around for a year, basically, instead of playing every day.
Yeah, just like missing out a whole season.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't take so much batting practice, whatever, until unless you play in a game, it's totally different.
Yep, absolutely it is.
Uh-huh.
Who do you think was the best player that you played with, John?
Oliva, at that time, I thought was the best hitter. And Harmon, it was just awesome power. Oliva could hit anything. I'd say Tony was the best hitter. I'd take Joe Mauer over Tony now. I know I argue with Reese about it, but I'd take Joe now. And just because he catches every day too,
Yeah.
And I just think that's worth points right there. And Tony was a great hitter, and Kyle was a good pitcher. Didn't throw the hardest, didn't have the best breaking ball, but ever smart and a real good idea. How to pitch. And that was another thing. I remember that Camilo Pascual got hurt that year and missed like the middle of the season or whatever, most of the season. I think he missed it all, but he came back towards the end of the year. I don't know if he pitched in the World Series or not. I can't remember. But he came back towards the end of the year, and we had clinched the pennant, and like I said, got that hit in Baltimore. I got to start a few games, at the end of the season there. So none of the regulars would get hurt or whatever, they put us in there. And I remember we caught Pascual, and I think it was like a 10 o'clock Saturday morning game in late September, because the Gophers were playing at 1 o'clock. Remember how they used to play the baseball game early so the crowd could get, the sports fans could get over and see the Gophers at 1. And I think I know we played the Angels like at 10 o'clock in the morning, and I think Camilo pitched, and I caught, started the game catching. And I remember sitting by Camilo, saying something, what do you want to do, use for signs and everything. And he was such a nice guy, gentleman, a nice guy. And I remember he looked at me and said, "You just put down what you want. Just go slow, not real fast. Go slow. And I'm not going to shake you off at all, because I don't want to." I remember saying, "How do I say? I don't want to show you up or embarrass you by always shaking you off. But I know these hitters, so I throw what I want to throw. But you put the signs down and don't go fast. Just go real slow. If you put down like one, it'll be a fastball. If you put down one." And I start winding up, it's a fastball. Just don't go from real fast, or I got to shake you off. Just go real slow. And I throw what I want to throw, and you catch it, okay?
That makes life a little hard for
you. Yeah, but that was nice from him to think, I don't want to embarrass you or anything. You do fine back there, don't worry. I just throw what I want to throw.
I used to enjoy watching him pitch. I thought he had a great curveball.
And, oh, wonderful.
You know, he was, I thought him and Pedro Ramos were two of the great characters and with the Twins early.
Oh, yeah. He was. I didn't know Ramos. I mean, he was with the Yankees when I was with the Twins. Mm-hmm. And Kenny would tell me stories about him. And other guys always laughing, you know, before the game with him and stuff. But, yeah, Camilo was a class guy. I remember that to this day. That was just so, you know, accommodating. I don't want to embarrass you by shaking, always shaking you off. I throw what I want to throw. You catch it. Just go slow with signals, okay? Okay.
You know, he's a hard guy to get a hold of. I've tried to, I was trying to get a signed baseball Twins card with him, and I just really had no success with that. Finally, I ended up getting one, but I ended up purchasing it. You send them something, you just never hear from them again. Or same with Pedro.
I don't know if Camilo. I think he lives in Miami, doesn't he?
I think so, and I think they got Camilo up for. You know, they have that.
We had that 4-year reunion back there in 2005 on the 65 game that I went back for. And that's the first time I'd seen Camilo. I'm thinking since, you know, the 68, I don't know, one of the last years he was with the Twins, you know, in spring training. I had seen him, and when he walked into the room, I didn't really recognize him at first.
I believe it.
I hadn't seen him in 35, 40 years, you know.
Yeah. I saw a picture of him here not too long ago, and I didn't recognize him either.
No, I really didn't. I didn't recognize him. I had to look, and then as soon as I heard him start talking to somebody, then I realized it was him. But I didn't recognize him. Somebody said, you know, who's that? I don't know. Somebody's relative. I don't know, because there are other people in the room. And I don't know if he's a former player.
Yeah. I think he, maybe last year or two, they've gotten Camilo to participate in that, Twins Fantasy Camp.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's been going back to that. I think they had some kind of money issues where they couldn't get him to come before, but I think they had him finally show up in one of their last two camps or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
You need to get involved in something like that.
Oh, geez, you need some big name. Nobody remembers me. They used to invite me down to the Twins Fest. I'd go down there and sign autographs.
Yeah.
You know, I think, what am I doing down here? You know, I'd be sitting there. Oh. And I remember going to, I'd play in some alumni things, and of course, that's always fun. I used to go to Minnesota and come back once in a while. We used to have the Major League Alumni Golf Tournament. I could belong to the baseball alumni organization, and always said I'd like to go back there, and I've been back up there probably two or three times, maybe four times. Frank Lucy ran that for a number of years, and now, quite honestly, with the economy the way it is, I think they have a difficult time finding a sponsor to.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's got to underwrite, you know, maybe $5,000 or $10,000 of it or something, you know, to whatever, and it seemed like every year I went up there, it would be a new sponsor, and I could certainly understand now with these economic times, right? Nobody would want to undertake it, so I don't think there hasn't been one up there for the last couple of years, anyway.
Yeah, I believe that.
That'd be my extent of my trips back. I still, you know, get up there, you know, my wife hasn't been feeling good, otherwise we'd probably spend, honestly, if she was feeling better, I'd get out of this heat and go up there. Honestly, I wouldn't spend the summers down here. I'd go up to, you know, rent some place in Brainerd or something. Reese has got that place up there, and he keeps saying, why don't you get to rent a place up here and get out of that heat. But my wife is just trying to, she's got a nerve damage, a spinal stenosis, which caused a lot of discomfort. And, you know, we haven't seen a neurosurgeon yet. We don't have many choices. Either that or you can go on pain medication, but a lot of that stuff you can get addicted to and hooked on. And, you know, she obviously is leery of that. She's also leery of, you know, surgery. And what I read about it sometimes, you can feel better for 6 to 8 months or a year, and then oftentimes the pain and discomfort returns, you know. So it's really difficult.
Kind of wicked sounding.
Yeah, it is. It really is. She just had, like, radiating pain down her legs and her feet, and her feet feel like they're always on fire, and pins and needles in her hands, and it seems like it's increasing as time goes by. It's, you know, again, now above her knees, like a better thigh. Miami is that she can't ever really get comfortable to sleep, so she's really sleep deprived. You know, can't get in a comfortable position to sleep. Sleeps so sporadically, like an hour and a half at a time, and then she probably doesn't get jobs, but doesn't get 4 hours of sleep a night.
Wow, that's hard.
You know, and it, yeah, going on like that for such a long time, I mean, it's difficult to bet. So she, you know, sometimes it's not unusual for her to. You know, if she gets drowsy, lay down on the couch for half hour, fall asleep, which I'm glad to see, but then she's up and, you know, it's comes nighttime.
Just ruins your sleep schedule, yep.
It really does.
My wife's had knee problems, and matter of fact, a year ago she had one of her knees replaced, and that's turned out really good for her, and she's thinking about doing her other one.
Did she have a lot of pain with it?
Yeah. It was kind of arthritic and genetic type of.
I know Reese told me he had one replaced about a year and a half ago. And the other knee called for a replacement too, but he told me he said, I'm not going through the other one. Seven, I saw it coming. He said, I had so much pain with that first one. He said, yeah, I'm fine now, but I don't know if I can go through it again. I'm just going to gut it out and drag this other one along.
It's hard, but yeah. You know, I spent time in the hospital when she was recovering from that, and you know, it is amazing how many of those things they're doing that in hip replacements nowadays.
Exactly.
It really is. What's your greatest baseball memory?
Oh, jeez.
Any one thing stand out?
One of my fondest memories. It wasn't professional baseball; it was college baseball. We're playing Oklahoma. Well, I can't remember. I think the junior or senior year, we had to win 2 out of 3 to win the Big 8 again and go to, you know, and then you played at that time. If you won the Big 8, you played the Missouri Valley Conference winner, which could be like St. Louis U or Xavier side. Some smaller schools, but all in the Midwest, and we always, you know, managed to win that. I mean, it was tougher winning the Big 8 than was getting by those teams, and we had to win 2 out of 3, I think, to win the Big 8 one year, and I think at that time we'd like play one game on a Friday afternoon, and then we play a doubleheader on Saturday. And going to the second game of the doubleheader, we were 1-1 here. We lost the first one Friday or won it or whatever, vice versa, lost the first game Saturday, whatever. 1-1, and I remember they had a big right. The guy threw real hard, pitched that third game against us. And my parents were there, and of course, the college ballparks weren't much then. They were a lot nicer now, but my parents were in the stands, and they were in that big of stands, but they were behind home plate. But anyway, I catch that second game of a doubleheader. I think it was like the fourth game, or fourth inning or something of that game. I got a double down the third baseline. I got on second base, and my brother was sitting behind me. And, we did this in high school, or if he got on or something, if anybody was, you know, either one of us was on second, the other one was hitting, we would try to pick up the catcher's sickness. And we'd like just grab the bill of our hats like I got him, you know. And if you bent over when you were taking your lead, as we had this from grade school days, where if you bent over, you know, as you're coming off the base to take your lead, if you were bent over, it was a breaking ball. If you were standing straight up, walking off the base, it was straight or a fastball. So, I think I was on that second base, and I saw this catcher just put down one sign. And he threw, like I say, put down a one. It was a fastball, and my brother, you know, I remember it was a ball. The first pitch was a ball. And I thought, I got the signal. This is it. This guy's only giving one sign. I grabbed the bill of my hat, and I remember my brother looking at me like stepping out of the box, grabbing some dirt and looking back at me. And I just nodded, holding the bill of my hat like I got him. And anyway, like 2 pitches later, this guy throws a breaking ball. I'm bent over, and my brother whistles it over to left center field fence. And I mean, you talk about a bolt. This thing had to be 4 1/4. I mean, it was, you know, like I rolled his curveball, and I could see him, Jim, just take a pump with this bat. Like, here it comes, and I know it's coming, you know. There were football goalposts. The way Missouri Field is laid out, there was football goalposts. Practice football field was behind the left field fence, left center field fence. And maybe 30 or 40... 50 feet, 60 feet, I don't know, whatever, behind the and it hit about 2 feet from the top of one of those goalpost bars, you know, the uprights. It came bouncing, hit it so solid that it, I remember the goalpost was quivering and the ball came right directly back right onto the field, you know. I mean, it was just a shot.
That's great.
We ended up winning the game, I think 2-1. I think we got another run. We ended up winning 3-1 or something. It was a 2-run home run. You know, but I remember trotting around, you know, after he hit it. I mean, I looked back at him, and he was just trotting to first. And I started, you know, going to third, trotting to third. I remember coming around third, looking up the stands. I remember my mom was crying, and my dad was just jumping up and down. He couldn't contain himself.
That's a great memory.
That's probably my fondest of playing baseball. I remember that just like, you know, like it was yesterday, but
yeah. You know, you do those things in high school as you're growing up and whatnot, and funny that it would all come back in and pay off like that.
Pay off, yeah, exactly. Yeah, we always did that for, you know, bend down, it's a break and pitch, stand straight up, it's a fastball or something straight.
Wow. When, after you kind of passed on staying in baseball and getting into managing with the rookie ball, what did you get into and what did you start to do? I think you were working on getting your degree during the off seasons when you were playing.
I did for a couple of years. I got, you know, working on a degree, and then I went back a couple of off seasons, and Devine put me on freshman football team on a graduate assistant, and they paid me like $100 or $150 for the month, something to, you know, mm-hmm. help pay the bills. And so I did that. I did two years, and the programs I had to go, I can't remember why I didn't finish it. I didn't finish the degree, and I don't regret it, but I can't remember the time why I decided not to. I thought probably halfway through the master's program or close to halfway through it. And I decided, geez, I got to make some money and get a job. And then I couldn't find a job. I was 28 or 29 years old, you know, and knocking on doors and interviewing in Minneapolis. Wanted to live in Minneapolis. And Glenda's parents, her parents are originally from North Dakota, but they lived, she was born and raised, ironically, she was born and raised in Minneapolis. And we met in college. And she was at a girls' school called Stevens College in Columbia, Missouri, the same town where the university is. And she's a year younger than me, and we met there. And her parents still lived in Minneapolis when she was attending college. And then we got married right after my senior year, after I got the $10,000, you know, after 22 years old, and she was 21. We got married in Bismarck, North Dakota. And her parents decided to move back there. Her dad worked for a number of years for Gamble's, which was a big department store chain at the time. You know, he would travel around the Midwest. He was in Dodge City, Kansas, and someplace in Iowa with them, and ran stores for them. And anyway, he got tired of it, and they were from Bismarck, like I said. And he bought a hardware store in a new strip mall that was going up in Bismarck at the time, and they incorporated a post office, kind of a pickup station, and sold stamps and stuff, which was a good idea because it was a boon for a little hardware business. If you're buying stamps, you're going to look and buy something else, you know, at the hardware store while you're there. And it was, they had a nice little business there, so they moved back to Bismarck, and they had a house in Golden Valley. And it was just a godsend for us. They gave the house to my wife in her name, you know.
Wow.
And you know, we'll work out some payment. I remember him telling me, John, but just start living. Well, he never asked for a dime. It was the same story, you know. But it was a good start because they didn't have to pay rent. I didn't have any income at the time, and I was looking for a job and living off of what we saved in baseball. I couldn't find anything. I mean, I was interviewing, and people would, you know, what have you been doing? I'm playing baseball. Yeah, playing, but what have you been doing? What do you really do for, you know? I said, played baseball since I graduated college, you know, 7 years or whatever. The minors most of the time, and, well, I mean, what, really, haven't you done anything else? No. I thought the best thing I could, you know, find was something in sales, and I got, met somebody at a party, and they were in construction equipment sales, and I didn't have much experience with it at all. I mean, ran a little bulldozer for a landscaping outfit around the Chicago area. I said, that was my experience. Ah, that's right. You get me to get along with people and stuff, and I started in that business, and I, you know, starved for the first couple of years, and then went to another competitor, one of the guys that was instrumental in getting me hired with this company. After about a year and a half I was there, he left and went with a competitor as a sales manager. As a salesman at the time, a peer of mine with this company, he got promoted to sales manager position with this competitive company. 2 days later, he's calling me up, get your butt over here. This is a better deal. We got better lines selling. That's why I took this was there about 10 years, and then the guys that ended up owning that dealership, it was a John Deere dealership, decided to get out of it. Another competitor called me up. I was a sales manager at that time. They decided to get out of there. And that business is, you know, like the housing market, peaks and valleys. And
sure.
So a competitor called me. I went to work for them. Worked for them for about 20-some years. And got crossways and I got laid off or let go by this company. And I had talked the last couple of years. I'd been talking to Reese, he was with Jim Beam. And, asked me, we don't hire anybody. Christ, we're not going to hire you, You're an old deputy. We don't hire old farts, he's giving me a hard time or whatever. I just stayed after him. Anyway, long story short, I got out with Beam and spent 14 years with them. And then retired from Beam. I started with Beam in Minneapolis and covered southern Minnesota and South Dakota for Jim Beam. And maybe three or four years there. And then the opportunity came to move to warmer weather and I took it. I moved to San Antonio, transferred with a company down to San Antonio, and covered Austin here, and kind of liked Austin. And retired about 2 years ago, and moved to Austin. And I live here now. Looking back, I wish I'd have. It's a great company to work for. It's almost, hate to say it, but it was almost like a. There's peaks and valleys, but nowhere near that equipment business. It's almost like a recession-proof business because, good times people celebrate and
sure.
In bad times they drown their sorrows, and the spirits business is always pretty steady. It's just that, in good times they sell the more expensive stuff. And slower times you can see the bottom shelf stuff disappear a little faster, just that they were going to buy their stuff, but just how much they were going to spend, And
mm-hmm.
We have a pretty good size portfolio, a lot of brands and stuff, and it was a good company to work for. Reese ended up, president, CEO of it.
Yeah, that's interesting how that all came.
Yeah. And he'd retired. I think he retired like 2 years before me, and I stayed a couple more years, and then they came through with a program with, 64. They came through a program and about like 13 or 14 of us into the corporate office in Chicago and individually offer us these packages, try to kind of get rid of the old timers.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to tell you to quit, you can stay around, but here's an offer on the table, we'll take care of you, we'll pay you this, and blah, 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 we'll make, here's your retirement, and here's based on your years with the company, and laid out a plan, and fine with me, I'm gone,
And that's what a lot of us wished for.
Yeah, exactly. No kidding.
As you got older. And, I spent all my time with Northwestern National Bank in Wells Fargo and retired from there. I didn't end up getting a package, but my wife worked for a brokerage firm, Piper Jaffray.
Uh-huh.
And they were cutting back, and she had been there a long time, 36 years maybe, and so she ended, they offered her a package where she got paid for a year, and
sure.
at more than what she was making.
Exactly, that same thing here. I said, you can't pass it up.
Yep. So
it was a pretty easy decision, I thought.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It gets to be that time, and for me, the only tough thing was, you finally, after all these years, get up to making good money, and you hate to walk away from
it. Walk away from it, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Especially if jobs are tough nowadays.
Sure, that's right.
But I retired a couple years ago, and it's working out pretty good. I can't complain.
Good.
So we're pretty happy. So do you follow Major League Baseball and the Twins?
Well, down here we get those. I watch it. I watch just about every night. I watch that Major League Roundup. I don't know if you're a round trip or something. They have it on ESPN or something where they may cut away a game. So some games in progress, like on the West Coast, which may still be going on because of the time zone out there. And then they'll usually do a recap of all the Major League games. So I get to see a little bit of a highlight of Mauer hits a home run or whatever, Morrow hits one or something. But I get the Ranger games. I get the Houston Astro games here in Texas. You get most either one or the other. It's usually on every night, be it home or road or whatever, but usually one of them's on. So I do, I don't watch them religiously, but Mm-hmm. Like I say, if I know the Twins are playing the Rangers or they're going to be on a, say, a game of the week or something, I make a point of, you know, watching them. But, I don't stay on top of it. I'm not familiar with, you know, I could name, you know, and on some teams I don't think I could name a player, but other teams I think I know. You know, Rangers I could tell you just about, you know, right around the infield, name everybody, you know, because I've seen them so much. But the Twins I try to follow either, like I say, if I'm fortunate enough to get the game here or else I read the Minneapolis paper, you know, read Hartman's or read the box score or something about Twins.
So. The Rangers are having a pretty good season.
Yeah, they are. Good hitting team. Really good hitting team. Now they're getting some pitching, which has been their downfall for years. Now they're getting some solid pitching, and they're pretty competitive. They really are. They got some good young ball players, too, to blend in with some of the vets. They got this Kinsler kid, which he's a good one. He's a second baseman. He's got the power. And a rookie shortstop, Andrus, has turned out to be a pretty good ball player. Yeah, they're getting some help from some young kids, too. So.
Yeah, they got some young pitchers that are having pretty good seasons.
Yeah, they do. Kid, and, they've got this Hunter, big, heavy, big kid.
Yeah.
Pretty good battler. Yeah. He's competitive.
Yeah, him and Holland are doing pretty good.
Yep.
Pretty good. Well, John, you know, I really want to thank you so much for spending so much time with us today. Is there any final words or anything you'd like to share with your fans back here in Minnesota?
I don't know how many there are, but hello, everybody. And, I enjoyed it, and thanks for calling, and I look forward to reading the October. You said sometime it'll be under twinstrivia.com, correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right, John.